How does a community react when it loses its place of worship? It's a very real question for one Jewish congregation in Sydney right now, and it's what we'll be talking about this week on The Good Life, with me, Mark Franklin, on ABC Radio and on your pod. In Judaism, the high holidays are a period in the calendar when Jewish people take time to reflect on the year that's passed and on the year that lies ahead. On the eve of the high holidays a few weeks ago, an accidental fire destroyed a synagogue on the north of Sydney. Gad Krebs is the rabbi at Kilat Masada. He says the timing of the fire has had a profound impact on his congregation. The high holidays ended this week with the festival of Sukkot. It's a celebration on which Jewish people leave their houses and their permanent places of worship, and instead they sleep and pray in temporary structures. For a congregation that has been forced to relocate into a temporary marquee, this festival has become particularly significant this year. Rabbi Krebs says Sukkot reminds Jewish people, and it's reminded his congregation in particular, about the things that really matter in living the good life.
My name's Gad Krebs. I'm the rabbi of the synagogue, Kilat Masada. 3 weeks ago, almost, it was a Wednesday evening, the night of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and I literally had an enormous amount of guests at my home, and they'd all left, and I passed out on the couch, and there was a loud rat-a-tat-tat at the door. A bunch of kids have come over and said, "Rabbi, the synagogue's on fire." And you know, I was completely astounded, luckily fully dressed, ran out of the home. Just go see, there were fire engines, ambulances, police, and literally saw the synagogue in flames. Could see flames coming out of the office window, and sort of stood there a bit astounded, a bit puzzled, I suppose. Well, this was the main entrance to the synagogue. It's been all boarded up now. Can't really see in except for a couple of the windows upstairs, the synagogue library and my old office, that the windows are blackened, and you can still see the black stain on the walls that remain.
And there's a bit of a smell still too.
It's considerably better outside than it is on the inside, but you can still smell that pungent, sooty smell.
What's it like on the inside?
Just burnt and charred and black everywhere, with the burning prayer books and burning Torah books, and just the dirt and the grub, quite unpleasant.
And you managed to rescue the Torah scrolls without any damage, I understand.
Yeah, a little bit of smoke damage and a little bit charred, but they were pretty much all intact.
How did you feel at that moment when you were standing outside the synagogue, which you lead, which you have a congregation that comes to every week, seeing flames come out of it? How did that make you feel?
The first impression was just quite surreal, not really appreciating the magnitude of exactly what was happening. On the one hand, very thankful that it was the fire was happening now rather than 3 hours prior, where there would have been up to 1,200 worshippers. But I suppose it was just a matter of looking at the fire and appreciating that, wow, this is something big, and the magnitude, not only on the quantum of what was happening, but also the meaning that I found in it and the significance of what exactly was happening.
We'll come to that in a minute, because of course it happened over the high holidays, which is a very important time in the Jewish calendar. There's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shemini Atzeret and Sukkot. Just briefly, could you try and give our listeners a sense of what this general period of the calendar means to the Jewish people?
The group of festivals which fall around this period are really quite universal in that they talk about the human condition in general rather than the unique Jewish history. So there's Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year, which rather than being a day of celebration is a day of introspection, a day of judgment, as we say. And Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, being the holiest day of the Jewish year, is one that we really seek forgiveness not only from God, but from our fellow man for any ills that we might have done towards them or towards God.
So the fact that all of these festivals are packed into a three-week period means that it's not only a very busy time of the year for Jewish people, what else does it mean?
Well, I think to a certain degree the Jewish people are supposed to be having an experience of walking on eggshells, that we're nervous, we're not sure what the new year will bring. It's not a time of excitement in as much as it's a time of trepidation. So when the angst and anxiety leading up to Rosh Hashanah, which is as we wish on the day that we should be inscribed for a book of life, a good year, and on that night the synagogue burns down, you know, I personally look at that and say, what is God trying to tell me? What is the message that he's trying to transmit to us, that this event happened when it happened?
How did you present that idea to your congregation in terms of the significance, in terms of the meaning?
I didn't give any definitive answer. I'm not a prophet and don't claim to be. So therefore, to say the reason why these things happened, I wasn't prepared to be so presumptuous. But that being said, as I looked at what we could take, what messages we could take out of the experience, one of the things that tragedy does in general, and I think this particular set of circumstances did in particular, was it brought the community together a lot. It brought a lot of people who might not be sitting next to one another in synagogue and might choose to avoid one another in the streets. It forced them to sort of see eye to eye, at least for the time being. So I use that as a platform to present the idea of the importance of unity, that sometimes we need tragedy to be able to see what keeps us similar rather than that which makes us different. And so if nothing else, we could take this as an opportunity to come closer to those people that generally we are certain degrees disenfranchised from. And that for me was the message I gave over and over again, the concept of unity, achdut as it's called in Hebrew.
I just want to point out here that the fire was accidental. There's absolutely no suggestion that it was anything but. But I also wanted to ask you, Rabbi, are there any particular religious responses or observances that apply to this situation?
I think that there's definitely an opportunity to bring some level of communal introspection. There's nothing legislated and there's no formal process, so to speak. There's no days of fasting or days of prayer and repentance. Uniquely for this case, I think it's rather up to the individuals and the community how they're going to respond to it.
So it's now, as you say, almost 3 weeks since the fire, and we're in the middle of the Jewish festival of Sukkot. Tell our listeners a little bit about the festival of Sukkot.
So the idea of Sukkot is that when the Israelites left the land of Egypt, for 40 years they were dwelling in the wilderness, and the question is, what were they dwelling in? So there are two opinions in Jewish thought. One is that they lived in booths, that they're literally sort of tent-like structures that they went around for those 40 years. The other opinion is that there were clouds of glory that enveloped the Jewish people, sort of a divine protection. Other way you look at it, the Jewish people build these little booths, little huts that we are supposed to eat, drink, sleep, learn, and dwell in for the course of a week. In significance for either of those, either for the Sukkot, the booths that we sat in, or in memory of those clouds of glory that enveloped us. So for 7 days, we leave our homes, we leave the comforts of life in general, and move into a more fragile environment.
We're actually sitting now in the sukkah, in the booth at Kilat Masada. We can see the sky through the roof. It's a thatched roof with bamboo. There's three walls and there's lots of decorations. There's paper mache, hanging lanterns, signs that kids have painted on the walls and colourful lights. Tell us about what a sukkah has to be.
A sukkah literally has to be a temporary structure. That's pretty much it. As far as the walls go, they can be made of pretty much anything. But the most important part of the sukkah is the roof. What is the roof? The roof has to be made of a natural material. In the case over here, we have bamboo sheets, mats. But any natural foliage is something can be. The idea being that on the sides that perhaps they could be solid, but the roof is permeable. The rain has to be able to get into the sukkah. So it has to be something that is, on the one hand, to protect us, but on the other hand, the protection is very flimsy, very fragile, and very doesn't do its job very well. Say those in better words, shall I?
Well, you're supposed to see the stars and it lets the rain through.
The idea is really the whole fragility of man. The whole festival of Sukkot is to try focus on that which is truly important and try to leave that behind which is superficially important. So the plasma screens stay inside, the water beds, the lazy boys. And really we come down to the bare essentials, that literally a roof over our head, walls, food to eat, and the family. And that's supposed to, you know, emphasize that which the Jewish name for the festival is Chag Simchatenu. It's the day of our rejoicing and happiness, that this is the festival of happiness. And happiness in Judaism is being able to focus on that which is important and to neglect and nullify that which is not. And if you look around, so this is definitely no lap of luxury. We sit here at the table, a couple of stools, not much else. Yet the comforts of health, the comforts of company, the comforts that perhaps in the broader scheme we look at as the small comforts, are really the things that give us the greatest level of simcha, of joy.
At a time of the year that the Jewish people are asked to leave their permanent places of dwelling, their permanent places of worship, to sleep and to pray in these booths, in a sukkah, I guess the irony is not lost on you.
I think it can't be anything but ironic. As I mentioned in one of my sermons, that for 7 days we leave our permanent home and we live in a booth. And for us, for 7 months, we will leave the permanent synagogue and move into a temporary synagogue. So I think that the message of Sukkot, in as much as it is to focus on those things that make us happy and those things that give us real joy, the great success of Sukkot will we be able to translate those messages during the 7 days into the other 51 weeks of the year. In that it's all well and good that we can sit in a booth for a couple of days and feel, yes, we appreciate what's really important, but can we take that into us? And so I would say from the synagogue point of view, can we take the next few months until the synagogue is restored, can we take that unity, can we take that ability to come closer together and be able to make that a permanent feature of the fully rebuilt synagogue?
So where has the congregation been praying since the fire?
Well, the Jewish people have always been a nomadic people in every sense of the word, and I think that the last few holidays have really, you know, emphasized that from our little community in particular. So on the morrow of the fire, we had 4 hours to try to figure out where everybody was going to go. So we davened, we prayed at a local community center, part of the Jewish community as well, which could only unfortunately accommodate a third of the community. Then we hired out the local school hall for the Day of Atonement, and now we've erected a marquee that can hold the bulk of the community, and this will be our temporary home until such time as we can move back into the synagogue.
Rabbi Gad Krebs from Kehilat Masada, a synagogue in Sydney, talking there about how his congregation has reacted to losing its synagogue in an accidental fire. The fire broke out on the eve of the most holy period in the Jewish calendar.